24 hours a day, 7 days a week. On demand, powerful talk radio. We global, and you can do nothing about it. BashaniRadio.com. Always talking about everything. Keep it locked. Keep it locked.
Welcome to Rethinking Mental Health, Episode 9, with JC Mears on Bashani Radio out of New York City. Always talking about everything. You can be heard where every podcast is played, iHeart and iTunes. So my show is definitely about looking at how we rethink and redefine mental health. I'm a mental health consultant based in New York, as well in Barbados. And I'm also looking at exploring how we can actually use the practice of gratitude to actually engage with our everyday lives. And so today I actually have a wonderful guest on my show, Mr. Tuck Taylor. He hails from out of Florida, and he is revolutionizing the way we see athletics, the way we teach. His interest is in beast thinking. He has a company called The Beast Compound, where we look and where he looks and focuses on the athlete. And he also looks at how the athlete's brain is engineered, as well as focusing on how coaches and managers and parents even could even get involved in the way in which we think and improve our children's mental health and our athletes' mental health. So thank you so much, Mr. Tuck Taylor, for agreeing to come on Rethinking Mental Health with me. How are you doing today?
Doing wonderful. Thanks for having me. You know, you've known me for a little bit now. You know, this is my passion to talk about this stuff and really get this out there so that we can start educating people about mental health and taking the stigma away that it has on it as far as, you know, people being crazy or anything like that. So I'm excited. Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey. So my first question to you, and I think I ask every guest this, you know, what were the lessons that you learned about mental health that may not have been purposely taught?
Oh, man. So it had to be a little background on myself. I played college basketball at the University of West Florida, and I think my mental health hit its pinnacle during my time as a college athlete. And I had a lot of stressful things go on during college. My dad had cancer when I was in college. A bunch of different things. I had problems, relationship problems, problems with my coaches. I got evicted from my apartment when I was in college during the season. I got harassed by the police and put into a car for a crime that I did not do, that whole thing. So I had a lot of just different things happening around me. And really watching myself a couple of times in my life just kind of get, you know, what they call out of pocket, okay, like out of character. And it was all due to the way that I was responding to what was going on around me. And that was, I guess, the main thing that I learned is that you can't avoid hard times, mm-hmm, but you can adjust the way that you respond to hard times because things are going to happen. And I let my mental health to a certain point get so bad to where I developed social phobia and performance anxiety and a bunch of different things. And the part where it kind of where they say the ish hit the fan was I was given a presentation in my communications class, and I had my first full blown panic attack.
Wow.
Yeah, so I broke out in what they call a diaphragmatic sweat. Diaphragmatic sweat.
Thought you were having a heart attack.
Yes, like it was one of the worst feelings of my life. Auditorium style seating. So like we had about 200 kids in that class. I remember just looking around and just walking off. Walked out of class. Left my book bag in there. Left everything, and I just left the class and told myself I wasn't going to go back. And I was a pretty good student, you know, all throughout high school and college. And the teacher told me she was going to give me a D if I didn't go see the school psychologist and kind of see what was kind of going on my brain. And that was kind of my introduction to mental health. So they set me up with the cognitive behavior therapist at the school. Oh, went there 3 or 4 times, learned some things. But it was pretty intense, learning that thing. And from then on, kind of curiosity is kind of what led me to where I'm at now, is just really trying to figure the brain out, and then my own brain out, and then also helping people figure theirs out as well to help them maximize their potential.
Oh, wow. That's powerful. Wow. That's really powerful. Where do you think you would have been if you did not accept the help that was being offered for you?
I would have been probably incarcerated, probably. Like, you know, one of my main missions with this too is, like, we have is Antonio Brown that's in the news right now. We have guys like this that, you know, the media likes to make a circus over once they start committing crimes and, like, doing stuff kind of out of pocket. But what's really going on, there's mental health issues there. So I think, like, we're missing the whole point, and we cheer for these guys on Sundays and Saturdays when we watch them play, but we're quick to judge once we see them, you know, doing things that are kind of uncharacteristic or frowned upon from society, and not asking why. Like, why is this happening? Does this guy, he might have CTE, he might have different things going on. So that's kind of, you know, I feel like I definitely will be in a lot darker place. I've had things happen since those incidences in college where I was able to really tap into my knowledge on mental health, be able to get myself through these times. And it became a deeper passion of mine once I started seeing kind of how the media responds to athletes that get in trouble and get DUIs and beat up on their wives and have sexual stuff that go on, because it's not, these guys aren't predators. These guys aren't monsters. They're just, they don't know how to, deal with their own mental health.
Yeah,
they have to regulate their emotions. I know you're big into emotional regulation.
Yeah.
I think that's a byproduct of when you don't know how to regulate your emotions. That's when you see the DUIs and the drug use and the over sexuality and sexual expression. Those different things come out when your own emotional health is kind of not being taken care of.
Okay. So walk us through those 4 sessions that you had, and what you think you learned from those 4 sessions?
Honestly, not a lot. Not a lot.
That's why this is rethinking mental health.
Yeah, not a lot. It wasn't really all that good. It really wasn't that good. And I think it was because the information, this was back in 2006. So what is that, 13 years ago?
Yeah.
And me and you both know the mental health has come a long way since then. And so it was classic cognitive behavior therapy on, you know, next time you feel nervous, think of a cool place or a safe place, which sounds good. But in all actuality, it's not really that good of a technique to use. I think since then, we're in the kind of golden age of neuroscience and we're learning so much more about our brains, more than we've known in the past, you know, 2000 years, we've learned so much in the past 20
yes.
years, you know, and the information that I've learned through, you know, people like Dr. Joe Dispenza, Jim Quick, all these other brain experts, Dr. Amen, a lot of these other guys that have really, really gone deep into the brain, I contribute them, Carol Dweck, you know, a lot of those people to the state of my mental health today and being able to recognize when, you know, I'm not feeling my best and having a game plan and a strategy ready to uplift my vibes better and help me feel a little bit better.
So is it safe to say that it was just a pause in a moment that needed to be paused?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Had that not had happened, I wouldn't even realize that I was having anxiety. I didn't know I had anxiety. I didn't realize that's what that was. I thought I was just nervous, more nervous than the average person. I had really not even look into anxiety before that all happened. And so they, like I said, they diagnosed me with social phobia and social anxiety. So, which I did started to kind of see because I didn't really like to go out either. And part of that was due to my fear of crowded places and kind of being out. And it's tough to have social phobia and be an athlete as well, too. So I wish I would have had the information that I had now back then, especially when it comes to athletics goals, because I do realize that I could have been a lot better player had I been a lot more mindful about my emotions.
Yeah.
I was able to regulate a lot better.
So for you, finding out, not necessarily as a diagnosis, and for those who can't see, we could see each other, but yes. You know, just the title or the label, it was for you to also, one, maybe see that your emotions had a greater magnitude of feeling over your experience of playing.
Right.
Or actually performing in front of a classroom. And two, also the fact that you kind of had to make the connection that, you know, the way you feel also impacts the way you think about people, how you relate to people, whether or not you leave your dorm room, and then by extension, how great an athlete you would actually be.
Right, right. So, I just think, you know, I was focused on so many different things, especially, you know, going back to the anxiety that I was facing on the court. I remember like being almost hypervigilant, if that makes any sense. Like,
yes.
I knew who was in the crowd. Uh-huh. I knew who was on the other team, like at any given time, which means I had less energy on my actual play and the strategy was going on.
Yeah.
So my brain was trying to process way too much at one time to where it hindered my performance.
Uh-huh. And that's that selective attention that we talk about with cognitive conditioning.
Yes.
And the way in which we actually need to train it rather than it being a disorder or a diagnosis, but
right.
being aware that all these things is like a baby when they see, you know, outside for the very first time, they look all the wrong.
Yes.
And then sensory, auditory, we have to kind of dim down all the senses and begin to narrow our focus with regards to our attention.
Absolutely.
So we have to learn how to selectively attend when we're in the heat of things.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So let's fast forward a little bit to how using that experience helped you to formulate the BEAST compound, which is about BEAST thinking and BEAST athletics.
Yes. So BEAST athletics was my first child that was born. And it was born just purely out of my desire to help people transform their bodies. Mm-hmm. And so I had, you know, did my due diligence and understanding body transformation. So I started becoming known in my area for posting some very good before and after pictures of my clients, which drew us a lot of attention. And then through my connections as being a, you know, a local athlete that went on to play college, I started to pull some of those resources and started training a lot of athletes. Things were good, but things could have been better. A lot of my people that were losing weight were regaining their weight back. Some of my athletes that were getting really good results in the gym, I wasn't seeing the weight room translate to on the court. They weren't really that good of athletes and players on the court. They were good athletes. They just weren't good players, performers. And so being a little selfish, but also wanting to impact our clientele at a deeper level, I started studying neuroscience. I wanted to figure out just how human beings were wired so that I could teach that to them so they can have a little bit more control over their performance. And that was just kind of a hunch I had. So I started diving into a bunch of literature and then became very obsessive about the things that I started reading about, to where I was like, man, like this is the future. Like, you know, it's one thing to get an athlete strong. It's one thing to get an athlete good at their sport. But it's another thing to help an athlete perform their best when it matters the most. You know, it's one thing to teach someone how to lose weight. But it's another thing to help keep that weight off, because when stress happens, you know, that's usually what would happen. You know, I would see my people that lost a lot of weight. And they've gained their weight back. And then some is like, oh, I had a baby and blah, 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 blah. Or my father died and this happened, or I lost my job and this happened. So life started to happen to them and it was causing weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I started really digging deep into neuroscience and really digging deep into the literature of the authors that I mentioned earlier, I developed my own model called BEAST Thinking. And so the Beast Athletics, the acronym in Beast Athletics stands for Breakthrough Elite Athletic Sports Training. The acronym for Beast and Beast Thinking is Brain Engineering for Athletes, Students, and Teachers. And so what our mission is to do for Beast Thinking is to teach people how to engineer their brain for success. And we do that with kind of a three-step process. First is through education. So we educate you. We tell you, we teach you about your biology. We become teachers and educators. So we teach you about the stress response and what goes on during the stress response. We teach you about the structures of your brain. We teach you about goal setting and alignment and neuroplasticity and the fact that your brain can make changes. Your brain's not just hardwired to be the same way all the time. The mind can actually change the hardwiring of the brain.
Wow, yes. That sounds really interesting. And we have to take a break right now, but as soon as we come back, we're going to get right back into Beast Thinking.
Yes, yes. Is this a commercial break?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So welcome back to Rethinking Mental Health. And we were just talking to Tuck Taylor about Beast Thinking. And I liked where I kind of want to pick up, even though you hadn't finished, but I want to pick up on that brain engineering for the athlete, the students, and the teachers. Why did you think it was important to have all three of those things to actually help people understand about mental health?
Well, first for, you know, I'll go in order, the athlete performance, you know, pure performance reasons. So, you know, I researched and found out that, you know, if an athlete is going through the stress response while they play, their working memory is hindered. So all the skills that they've acquired over time, all the plays that they were supposed to store into their mind are now lost, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that person's nervous. So we've seen it ton of time happen with athletes that have these big blunders. It's because their mind's been becoming impaired. Also understanding that in that fight or flight, your heart rate is up and your respiratory is up. So now athletes are more fatigued faster than they normally should be. So emotional regulation, getting them to be able to get recognize that stress response and then get out of it is important. So that's the athletes. For students, the same thing. You know, they have tests, they have stressors as well that they need to be aware of so that they can test better and speak in public a lot better. And then teachers, that's any teacher, that's a coach, that's a parent, that's a school teacher. It's so important, like we talked about in our podcast, that teachers understand mental health. That teachers understand their own mental health, that teachers allow themselves to be vulnerable enough to have those conversations. And they're very resourceful in bringing people in to help because they are responsible. We are responsible because me and you both are teachers for bringing up the next generation of leaders. And if we can do a really good job and really tap into that, we're actually elevating mankind by helping us understand our biology. For the first time ever, you know, we're really starting to understand how we're wired. You know, a lot of the spiritual practices are now being demystified and been proven correct through neuroscience. So now, you know, I'm very passionate about is like, we have to start educating people now about this stuff because technology is rising so fast. And we already see technology using people because people are unaware of themselves.
Yes.
And the more aware you are of yourself, the less technology can use you, and you now can use technology. And we see that a lot with our youth. So that's in a nutshell. Before the break, we were also kind of talking about our E3 philosophy with Beast Thinking. And so we had the education part, which is we was talked about educating you about your brain, and then second E is engineering. So that's cognitive conditioning. That's working out. That's the actual physical practices that take place into helping you have a stronger body and a stronger mind. And the third E is empower. So once you've been educated and once you start the engineering process, now you get the results and now you're empowered.
I love that.
To do that. You know, so we're real big on that. I try to do the physical thing with Beast Athletics and not include the mental part, but it just wasn't as impactful.
Yes.
You know, people were getting results, but not keeping them. People were feeling good in the moment, but not realizing and not even having the self-awareness on why they were even feeling good in the first place. And when you don't know why, it's easy to try something else and get away from what was working. And so now it's a requirement. You know, each member that joins my facility, they sit down, they go over what's called Beast Thinking Level 1. We go over goal setting. We go over how to engineer your brain. We give like a nice base lesson on neuroscience, a little neuroscience 101. We educate them all about that. And then we allow them to start working out and hitting the weights. And what we've seen is that people get better results and long-lasting results because they're more self-aware during the process.
I love it. That's pioneering. So I'm going to ask you, what direction do you want to see mental health go in?
I feel like we are going to be a trendsetter. Okay. I feel like what we're doing now is, you know, and I don't like calling ourselves a gym because we're not a gym. Yeah. But I think what's going to happen is, and there's going to be lifestyle enhancement facilities, places where you can go to not only work on your body, but also work on your brain and your mental health. And there will be specialists and trainers that to help work on all the above.
That's so powerful. As I'm listening, I can actually see it. I want to ask you to actually give us a mental health myth. If we could break one mental health myth that's out there, I'm asking all my guests, what's one a mental health myth?
I think the word disorder should be a myth, because I don't think you have a disorder when you have anxiety or depression. I just think you're having a bad response to things. These are just responses. Yeah. And so that's what if I had to call BS on something. I think too, when you say you have a disorder, you start to make that your identity.
Yeah.
I've seen so many people talk about, oh yeah, my anxiety, they're claiming these disorders, but they're really just bad responses. That's not who you are. That's a malfunction in how your body is responding to a stimulus.
Yes.
So to claim that and own that it's tough for me to like really rock with it all the time.
Thanks for sharing that myth. Hope our listeners are actually looking at how we can actually create shifts. Now, one of the parts of this show is about gratitude. I'd like you to share at least three things that you do on a day-to-day basis that helps you get through the day that are gratitude.
One is first realize just how lucky I am when I wake up in the morning that I woke up. You know, people don't realize, you know, you have friends and family that pass and you see people pass in the news. It's just like, we're not guaranteed to be here for a long time. So the fact that I have the ability to wake up and to go work on my passion every day. Like, I'm so grateful that a lot of my energy, a lot of my sweat equity goes into my passion, you know, so I'm grateful for that. And another thing that I would say too is changing, and I've seen this a lot in social media, but it's powerful. It's changing your verbiage, changing your I have to's into I get to's.
Oh, wow.
It's not like I have to go to work. I get to go to work today.
I love that.
That's a privilege. It's not like I have to watch my son today. No, I get to watch my son today.
It's an opportunity for growth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anything that we are blessed to encounter in our walk is a blessing, you know? And it's all about the lens on which we choose to view our reality that gives us our said reality. And so if you're the I have to person, life is a drag, life is a burden, your kids are a burden, your job's a burden, you know, you're creating this narrative that your life is just bad. Yep. But when you change your verbiage around and create a different narrative and tell yourself a little bit better story, now life looks a little bit different. You know, it's when we change the way we look at things, the things we look at start to change.
Yes.
Definitely. And so it's all about just approaching life with just a little bit more of an optimistic, you know, glasses half full mentality than choosing to see the bad things. So I think that's what gratitude is really. Mm-hmm. It's just, that's why I say gratitude's latitude. You know, the more you continue to choose to deliberately look for the good things, more good things are going to have to appear for you to see and be grateful for.
Definitely. So our time is almost up, Tuck. And I know you and I could talk forever.
Yes, we can.
And I'm definitely going to have you back on the show. You're such a wonderful guest and dropping these nuggets of wisdom for my listeners. What is the, if this was the last opportunity for now that you get to share with my listeners, what would you want to tell them about mental health and rethinking it?
I would say, you know, be self-aware and be grateful.
Okay.
Be self-aware and be grateful. Our emotions is our internal GPS system. So if you start to feel a certain way, that means you need to kind of get back on the road, you know. If you know, our cars come with all these sensors now, and the roads have all these sensors. So, like, if you're on the highway, you start to hear that, you know, you're off track.
Yeah.
And you get back on track. Or to me, our emotions are the same way. Once we start to feel a certain way, if we are aware enough, that's why self-awareness to me is so huge. Now we can be more deliberate and more intelligent about getting back on track and feeling good, because it's our choice whether we feel good or feel bad. It's our choice, you know. So that would be my lesson. If I had to, like, give somebody life advice in 2 seconds or 2 minutes, whatever 2 minutes you gave me, that would be my advice.
Thank you so much. Yes. And how can people get in contact with you?
Multiple ways. So at The Real Tuck Taylor on Instagram, also at Beast_Thinking on Instagram. We have a book coming out hopefully later this year by December. It's called Beast Thinking. That's brain engineering for athletes, students, and teachers. It's the total game changer. We read all the books, the big books, and we've kind of condensed everything plus our own life experience into one really, really good resource for people to not only help themselves with their own mental health, but to teach other people how to help themselves with their mental health.
Awesome. So much. You want to leave a number with them?
Yes. It's area code 727-225-0048. Text me, call, email me, whatever you got to do. I'm here to help you. It's my passion. Janelle, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. And thank you guys for listening to Rethinking Mental Health show on Bashani Radio out of New York City. And remember to update your perspective in order to change your narrative. Have a great day.
All right.